I'd like to start with how you signed and what scout was responsible for your signing.
I signed in, out of junior college in Southern California by Spider Jorgensen, ex-Brooklyn Dodgers player. That ended up being my rookie league manager on Wednesday. And he was a character. He could tell I wasn't going to sign, really. I was drafted out of high school. I went to JC for a year, and I was going to transfer over to USC or UCLA. Spider talked me into signing.
Who drafted you?
First, Cleveland Indians, and then the old Seattle Pilots, mm-hmm. and then Kansas City. And they were there when they were an expansion team in 1969.
Yeah.
They convinced me that Spider convinced me that I had a better shot by signing then with an expansion team than going to 4 years of college and then signing.
Did you, looking back, say that he was right?
No. If I had to do it over again, I would have gone to 4 years of college.
Uh-huh. And
instead of, you know, banging around the minor leagues for 3 years. But, it worked out. I got, you know, I did make it. You know, he might have been right. I don't know. I mean, I might end up stuck, you know, in the Yankee system or Cincinnati system or something, you know, behind a bunch of good ball players.
Yeah.
Stuck in the minor leagues. In those days, they didn't move you around. You just stayed there, you know. But, I tell the younger players that I know here, you know, that unless they're a real high draft pick, they're going to give them a lot of money to go to school, then come out and play.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever go back to school?
No. I played until I was 34.
Yeah.
So it was real tough to get back in the mode to go back to college.
Oh. Did they give you any kind of bonus?
Yeah, maybe small bonus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in those days it wasn't small. They gave me, you know, all my schooling and $5,000. I think I was drafted third round or something in the secondary phase. Second mm-hmm. or third round, something like that.
Yeah.
But they still didn't give you much money.
And your initial minor league experience, was it daunting, intimidating?
No. I liked the minor leagues. I was ready to get out on my own, and I enjoyed traveling. You know, playing ball. I like playing baseball. So.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, I played in the old stadium, small town, you know, and not much meal money.
You're talking about the Northern League.
Yeah, playing the Northern League, rookie league.
You had some long bus rides.
Oh yeah. Yeah, San Jose, the California League was pretty nice. I didn't mind that one. Played there, and the Southern League was a lot of bus rides. Midwest League, there was a lot of bus rides, a lot of small towns.
Yeah.
Old stadiums.
Mm-hmm. No, I think if you went as far as places like Aberdeen and Eau Claire.
Duluth. No, Eau Claire, I don't think he was in it.
Fargo?
Fargo was in it.
Yeah.
Sioux Falls.
That's long.
Yeah, Spider Jorgensen was a manager, and he was good. I enjoyed playing. I had a lot of good managers. I was lucky. I enjoyed playing for him.
Mm-hmm. He talk good. About old Brooklyn days?
Oh, yeah. He's a funny man. He's a character.
Hmm. Did you learn anything?
Oh, yeah. You know, the minor leagues, you know, you get to play a lot, you know, so.
Yeah.
I didn't really mature. I did okay, but I didn't mature until I was in Jacksonville in AA, and then for some reason I just matured and started throwing harder and more consistent, more control, and then they actually took me to the big leagues from AA. I played a little bit in AAA, not much.
Yeah. And when you went to spring training in Kansas City, was this when they had their academy?
No, that was a little bit later. We went to Daytona, was the first year. And they had, you know, some barracks out there by the Daytona Speedway.
Mm-hmm.
They had some old barracks out there for clubhouses. And they had 1,000 guys out there. You know, I thought there was no way they'd get lost in the shuffle. But made it through that. And then the next year, I think it was the next spring, they had the Academy Bowl. In the spring training site.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't go to, you know, like they picked up players for that academy. You know, like Frank White, and, you know, there was a couple guys that made it through it.
Yeah.
But I went through the regular draft system and spring training and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where we had spring training, the same place.
Yeah. Did you have any contact with Sid Thrift then?
Yeah. Yeah, he was there. Yeah, Sid, he wore cowboy boots. I think it was Sid that wore the cowboy boots. I remember him being there. He didn't say much to me.
He supposedly started that, or had something to do with that whole idea.
Oh, the academy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was him. And the theory behind it was good. I thought it was a great idea. You know, you just picked out good athletes that had very little baseball experience, and teach them, you know, the correct way to play. You know, but they just never, I don't know, they just got tired of spending money on it or what happened.
Yeah.
If they produced a couple players, that was about it.
Mm-hmm.
They used to run us. They had all kinds of stuff. There are different things that they would do that other clubs weren't doing. They had people coming in testing our eye-hand coordination, and, you know, why we could do things other people couldn't do, and, you know, the whole, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of different things. They had some Europeans come in and photograph us. Me and Steve Busby one time. They're actually tracked. They're in, and I thought this was a great idea, but they didn't use. They're actually tracked. They didn't even speak hardly any English. And they would film like a javelin thrower or a disc thrower or somebody, you know, or an athlete that's running or jumping or whatever. And they could transform that photo, that film, you know, the motion into stress points. So they could tell what stress points were the strongest, the hardest, the knee from the toes all the way up to your fingertips. They had a way of determining the stress points, how much was stress at each point. So they could tell you if you were in excessive stress on your shoulder, elbow, knees, hips, ankles, anywhere.
Did they tell you something about you?
Yeah, Busby and I, they did. They filmed Steve Busby and I in New York. And they came in, and my pitching coach was in the meeting, Galen Sisco. And he told me later on that they came in and said that, described exactly what kind of pitchers Steve and I were. He was different from me. I was long, thick skin, tall, skinny guy, you know, big delivery, fluid motion. You know, that's how I had to pitch. And Steve was a short, stocky guy, power pitcher, you know, big, hard curveball, you know. And these guys knew nothing about baseball. And he said they described exactly what kind of pitchers we were. And they told him that I would have no problem, that my because of my delivery and motion and the angles, and they knew the exact correct angles for your delivery, where it should be at, and the whole smear, that I wouldn't have any problem. But the other pitcher, which was Steve, pitcher, they call it A and B, pitcher A and B, pitcher A would have problems with his elbow and shoulder. The stress that he was putting on those points was excessive, and it was just a matter of time before he had problems. And Steve Budden blew his shoulder out. And he had trouble with his elbow, too. They predicted it exactly. And the point they were making is that they could go to high school, the kid they were going to draft, that they could go look at a kid and film him and tell him, you know, this kid out of high school is going to blow his arm out if he doesn't change within a certain amount of time. And you're wasting your money to draft that kid and pay him off, spend all that money in development. And
where were the pictures taken?
In New York.
What setting?
Yankee Stadium.
Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, the game. And I thought that was...
It was game action they were photographing?
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't just a demonstration.
No, not just practice, because they couldn't get the, obviously you never throw on the side like you do in a game, you know.
Uh-huh.
A lot of difference, so. But they didn't, nobody used them, but Galen Sisco and I talked about it later on, and I thought, we said, geez, we could save the club millions of dollars by just in their drafts, knowing that the kid is going to get hurt, or you need to change something that he's doing to relieve that stress at those certain points. So I thought that was a hell of an idea, and they never did use it.
At that point, of course, they had to wait for some period of time to see if it turned out right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You wouldn't know until, you know, years.
Yeah.
It'd take years to figure that out.
So I guess maybe that's why they didn't pursue it, because there was no immediate result.
There was no immediate result. No,
yeah.
But it made sense to me. Yeah, and Steve Busby, it turned out to be right later on down the road.
Yeah.
And that was only a couple of years later.
You know of any other pitchers or players that they did that with?
No. That was, You know, I didn't really think that much about it until, you know, years later.
Yeah, you were an experiment.
Yeah, it was just, I remember, because I didn't know they did it, you know, because it's a game. And I didn't know, everybody takes pictures of Yankee Stadium.
Did anybody, as a result of that, try to change Busby?
No, I don't think so.
I guess it sounded too way out.
Yeah, you know, his delivery to me, I mean, he threw two no-hitters his first 2 years, you know, and, you know, his delivery looked fine to me. You know, he's just a strong guy, you know, real strong. And he didn't do anything excessive in his delivery. But apparently he was straining or stressing somewhere in there that they picked up. You know, but they were, like I said, they were really for track. They could, you know, for javelin throwers and discus throwers, and I guess they used them in Europe. They did use them over there. But we never picked them up here.
You know whose idea it had been?
Yeah, somebody in, they went to Kansas City, somebody in Kansas City, and they decided to, you know, go ahead and have them demonstrate. I thought, you know, that's just something. But they, you know, Kansas City did those kind of things in those days, like the academy and the people come in testing us, and the other clubs I don't think were doing.
I heard Rick talk about it. Yeah. Huh. When was that?
Must have been in, it was the early 70s, 74, 74. 5, 3, 4, 5, yeah. Something like that.
Uh-huh.
In the 70s.
You're a starter in the minor leagues, and how do you wind up as a reliever?
I went from a starter in the minor leagues to, when I came up as a closer, and then in the first part of my career, and then in the end of my career, I ended up being a starter again. And then middle, starter, everything short.
Who?
But Jack McKeon was a manager. And when I went to spring training in 73, they, I don't know whose idea that was, really. Galen Sisco, Jack McKeon, they had me as closer in spring training. And Steve Busby and I threw a no-hitter against Detroit in spring training. And then I didn't give up a run the whole spring. And they saw I could throw every day. You know, I didn't bother me to throw every day. And I decided that's good, so I had to make them a closer, you know.
You didn't have any input.
No, they didn't ask me that stuff in those days. That was their decision. That's what got me to the big leagues.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it. I liked the short relief. You know, I didn't like the starting that much because you sit around too much.
Yeah.
You know, and they went to started going to five-man rotations. You sit around for 4 days.
Yeah.
You know?
You'd rather be in the bullpen.
Oh, yeah. At least I get up every night in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the games that you get in.
Did you ever have any arm trouble?
Not at the end of my career. It's weird, you know. It's because it could have happened the first day, you know. But I was in Chicago at the Planters and Cubs, the last game of the season, and they had me starting. And I was a veteran pitcher. I was 33 years old, which kind of confused me. But then the more I started thinking about it, I said, well, they're going to trade me. Somebody's here that's, you know, wants to see me, so they're going to trade me over the winter, which I was right. They paid me to Boston. But you mind if I smoke?
No.
But I think I pitched 6 or 7 innings, and I had a base hit. I was on second base. Somebody else got a base hit. I tried to score. Catcher nailed me, put me up in the air. I came down on my shoulder. I think they took me out after that. I pitched one more inning. It was real hot. Anyway. Mm-hmm. But I came down on my shoulder, and I just got showered and got on the airplane and came back home down here to Florida. And then, you know, I took off for the 3 or 4 weeks, and then I went back and started throwing, and it didn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see something's wrong. So apparently, when I came down, you know, I tore the rotator cuff or something in there, and I went to they traded me to the Red Sox, and I went to spring training, and it just never felt good, felt right. You know, it's off and on. I throw good, you know, one game, next game, just nothing, you know, and it started hurting a little bit. And then they're talking about cutting on me, and I was 34 years old. I played 11 years in the big league, and I was tired, getting tired of traveling. And I said, nah, yeah. That's not worth the year, you know, rehab and all that stuff.
Yeah. Maybe it'll work and maybe it won't.
Yeah.
Do you think that throwing a lot, I've been told that pitchers these days, if they don't throw enough, that's why they have all the arm trouble they have. Do you think that working in the bullpen and warming up a lot and seeing a lot of action was better for your arm?
You know, people asked me that before, and why there's so many injuries. I don't know. To tell you the truth, but we all threw a lot. I know that. You know, I threw every day. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
If Dennis Leonard, as a starting pitcher with Kansas City, he'd throw 9 innings, and he'd come out the next day, he'd throw as hard as he did the day before in the game, you know? And I don't know. Maybe that has something to do with it. In those days, too, they thought, a starting pitcher was going almost 300 innings.
Yeah.
Nowadays, 200 is like, they go, well, that guy went 200 innings.
Yeah, my arm's going to fall off.
But what?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe that has something to do with it. They have all the specialty. We had the closers in those days. But we didn't have the specialty middle guy, the middle setup.
Yeah.
They had the middle setup closer type deal now.
Yeah.
We had the closer, but we didn't.
You pitched more than one inning, didn't you?
Oh yeah, we pitched 3 innings. You didn't get a save, but you pitched 3 innings. Yeah. So really, I guess the closers in those days were kind of both middle and closer, I guess. The save rule was different.
Which went back before there even was a save rule, because the relief pitcher would finish a game if he could.
It wasn't
a matter of, you pitched the eighth inning and we got another guy for the ninth.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It was still that style.
I don't know. People ask me that, and I don't know the answer to why it seems like there's more injuries.
Well,
I think in those days, too, a lot of guys pitched, with nagging stuff. Your arm was sore or, a little tired or whatever, from pitching a lot. And where these, I think nowadays, too, what I've heard is, their agents will tell them, if your arm doesn't feel right, don't pitch.
Doesn't it hurt after every time you pitch?
Well, yeah, it's going to hurt. You put ice on it, and it's going to be sore and stiff the next day.
Yeah. You go out and you throw again. Except that's what you did. That's not what they do now.
I think that might have a little bit to do with it. They don't want to take a chance on their career and all that money. There's a lot more money involved.
Yeah.
Than what it was in those days.
Whitey Herzog, what kind of a...
He's my favorite.
Okay, you like that, man.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
I had good ones. I had Ralph Houck was great. Danny Ozark was great. I had some good managers. Dick Houser. Another one, yeah. He was a good one. I only had him one season in New York.
What was Whitey Herzog's style?
He knew how to handle players, and he ran the team. And he's a smart manager. He didn't have, like Earl Weaver wasn't out maneuvering him, where other managers we had, that would happen to. And I thought he was most of the players really liked him, I think. Yeah, there's always a few that disagree
with
anybody.
Yeah.
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 But as soon as he came there, we were successful. We won three, went to the playoffs 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
We won 102 games in 77. And our team wasn't anywhere near the Yankees. And we still, we should have beat them in 77. We had the best team in baseball in 77.
Mm-hmm.
And they beat us in the last inning of the last game 2 times.
Yeah. And was it Herzog that they sort of turned you back into a starter?
Yeah. Yeah. He had me he had me start in 77, 78, something like
76.
That. 76.
Yeah, you start 27 games.
Yeah.
76.
Yeah. And I wasn't really, I should have prepared more for it. I could have been stronger than, in those days we didn't work out the weights that much.
Mm.
That wasn't, they weren't sure about pitchers using weights.
Yeah.
I was tall and skinny, and my endurance, I'd go 5 or 6 innings real good, but then, I'd start fading.
Mm-hmm.
But Whitey was pretty good at deciding when I could come out.
You never argued with him.
Oh yeah. But he got to where he'd come out there and ask me how I felt. I'd tell him fine. And, you know, and I'd always tell him that. Mm-hmm. So after a while, he wouldn't even come before. As soon as he stepped out of the dugout, he was going to wave the guy in. You know, and I'm yelling at him, hey, wait. Yeah. So he caught on to me real quick. I didn't want to come out of the games. I don't care if I was tired or not.
Frank White told me once that the greatest feeling was winning the 76 division.
The first
one? You weren't supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah, because Oakland, we were in the same division as Oakland. And, well, when they lost Catfish, I knew that was that. They lost Catfish in 76, 75 or 76, and mm-hmm. he was gone. When they lost him, I knew we had him. We'd always come up, you know, two or three games short. It'd come down to that last series, and usually in Oakland. You know, at the end of the season, we'd be behind him by one or two games, and we had to go to Oakland on the West Coast tour. And we'd lose two out of three.
Mm-hmm.
And that'd be it. Mm-hmm. You know, but we finally beat him. They lost Catfish, and I knew we had him.
Yeah, but as you say, the team in 77, you expected to win that.
Oh, yeah, we had the best team. But we beat everybody.
But 76 was not
right.
That expected.
Yeah. I mean, we were coming in second place. And
yeah.
We were always behind Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they had that's when they had the World Championship, all the World Championship teams.
Yeah.
So we were a tough division.
And the next year he put you back in the bullpen.
Yeah, I can't remember why. I think we picked up another starter somewhere, or lost a relief pitcher or something. We lost, I can't remember what the reason was.
Do you pitch as much to the umpire, to the umpire as the batter? Do you? Was your approach any different depending on who was umpiring? Were there umpires that had different strike zones, different biases?
I got along good with the umpires. I never argued with them. And I had my catcher do it. You know, I just told them, I had good catchers, and I just tell them, I'm not going to argue with them, you do it. You know, they know how to do it. Well, you know, they sit there and talk to them. While they don't, you know, look back and show them up or anything, you know. And you could tell what they were going to give you and what they weren't. You know, if they weren't going to give you the outside part of the inside or low or high or whatever, you know, because each game, they'll call a game different too. They're like everybody else. They'll, you know, and they have bad games too.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I got along fine. There's no sense in me arguing with them and showing them up and getting thrown out of the game. Didn't.
No.
You know, I had a catcher talk to them all the time.
What did you look for in a good catcher?
I had good ones. You know, where you didn't have to shake them off. You know, we call our own games. You know, I had a couple times managers wanted to call the game. You know, every time, if I ever saw that catcher look over in that dugout to get a pitch, I'd call him out there and say, hey, because I'm the one that's getting the wins and losses out here, not that manager or coach, whoever trying to call the pitches. But, you know, once I had, you know, Bob Boone. Buck Martinez was a real good catcher. So I had Bob Boone, Daryl Porter, you know, some really good, Rick Cerrone in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once you play with them for a while and they know you, you know, you know each other, then you know, if you're throwing good, they know how to work you. If you're struggling, they know how to work you. You don't have to stand out there and worry about what the next pitch is going to be. I'd shake off pitches every once in a while, but it usually, you know, if the catcher was good, you know, I should very rarely, like Bob Boone, he's a really smart catcher.
Mm-hmm.
And Martinez, obviously if you had a young catcher, you know, then you've got to start thinking, you know, who's hitting and, you know, how we're going to work this guy. But a lot of times I didn't know who's hitting and didn't even care. I just followed what the catcher was calling.
Did you, when you started, or even the reliever, was there a pre-game meeting with the pitchers?
Yeah, before every series. Yeah, before every series. Because we had advanced scouts. we were doing that. I think Whitey started that, the advanced scouting deal. And so before every series, we had the pitchers and catchers in there for a meeting, and we'd go over every hitter, who's hot, who's not hot, how we're going to work this guy, that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, I mean, after a while, you know all the guys, except the young guys that come up and you need to go over those guys. But
yeah.
You just want to know if they're swinging the bat good or not, mostly, because you know how to pitch them, where you want to pitch them.
Mm-hmm.
And Whitey was good at that. And it's how the rest of them after that did it too. Hauser, most of all of them would do that. Because all we had, they would pay for advanced scouts, so you know what's going on.
Yeah. I want to ask you about control. I asked Bob Turley about this. Is it mental? He was pretty wild when he started. And we talked about guys we talked about Steve Blass, who suddenly
just lost it.
Couldn't get the ball over the plate. Did you always have control?
Yeah. I could always throw strikes. I used to close my eyes sometimes, throw strikes, just to do it.
Can you understand somebody who couldn't?
Yeah. Yeah, I can. Yeah, because it's mental. If your brain goes haywire, the way I look at it is, you do something repetitive enough, it programs your brain, for your body to do something. If you do the same thing exactly over and over and over and over, mm-hmm. Well, you're telling your brain this is what you're going to do, and that's I can just close my eyes and throw strikes. I may not be up, down, inside, or outside, but I can throw a strike.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those guys, my point of view of it was just something in there just went haywire and it wouldn't do it anymore. It wouldn't tell the body to do the same thing over and over and over again. It's the same way it did it to throw a strike the time before.
And some guys never get it.
Yeah.
To lose.
Yeah.
Like Sid Ankiel.
Oh, yeah. He's having
one of those.
Time, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of guys, too, coming up that throw 100 miles an hour ahead, but had no clue where it was going, So, it's just something, I guess, that you pick up, Steve Carlton and Catfish Hunter, they're like machines. They sit there and watch them. It's just amazing. They do the exact thing. Maddox is another one. They just the exact same thing over and over, and it never changes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like you just flip a switch like a machine, and it just boom, 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 boom,
yeah.
They're going.
I don't know if it's the mechanics or how they're throwing or...
Yeah, they have the mechanics. They know them, we all know our mechanics.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of repeating the routine, and then making those little changes for a curveball, slider, change up, inside, outside, up, down, making those little adjustments to throw that pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And some guys, I think, like those guys, just something went haywire there. They had it. They were doing it before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain.
Yeah.
You saw a lot of action in the 76 series against the Yankees.
Beat them one year.
But
it was, the Yankees I didn't really pitch that much against the Yankees, but they had a bunch of left-handers. The only one I'd come in every once in a while, and why did you just bring me in for Thurman Munson?
Yeah.
Right-handed hitter, or Lou Piniella. And then the rest of them, a lot of them other guys, Bucky Dent, the rest of them were, a lot of them were left-handers.
Mm-hmm.
Reggie Jackson, Chambliss, they had that little short porch in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
And then the last 78, I gave a home run to Thurman. That really processed the World Series, going to the World Series.
Yeah.
And that was, in fact, that was the last pitch I threw for Kansas City. They traded me the next year. I had a rough year that year. I didn't throw well that year.
Well, you were you lost 3-2 in the other years.
Yeah.
And 3-1 in that one.
Yeah. In the last inning, the other 2 years, we lost in the last inning and the last game.
Yeah.
And we had a 2-run lead in 77 in the last inning and lost it. Something
Well, they got 1 in the 8th, and you were leading 3-1 after 7.
Yeah.
And they got one in the eighth and three in the ninth.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in 76,
Chambers hit a home run.
In the ninth inning. Another loss. Okay, after the first 2 years, can you just put that behind you, or is that in, would that be in the players' minds when you're, now it's third year?
No, the Yankees?
Yeah.
No, it never bothers. We had a really good ball club. You know, we're all young guys that the Royals brought up and put together, you know, and we didn't have the talent, nearly the talent the Yankees had. We just played real well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so our type of game was real aggressive, you know, and we just never gave up, you know, we just keep going, going, going.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was tough losing 3 years in a row to them, but it wasn't anything that we were just all, geez, we can't beat these guys. We beat the hell. I like the seven-game series a lot better than the five. It's just one thing here or there, and like the home run to Thurman Munson, you know, or it's over with. You know, you're just down. You're just tough to come back. So
is that a sinking feeling when you're standing out there?
It was in Yankee Stadium. I mean, that place went berserk. You know, ground shaking. But you know, I just wasn't happy about it. I like Kansas City. I wasn't happy about being traded the next spring. That's just part of baseball, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and you get traded April.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
The day we were broke. The day we were going breaking camp. I met him at the airport in Tampa. Plus going to the National League, you know, I didn't. In those days, the only time we even saw the National League was, you know, a few teams in spring training.
Yeah.
So it was tough.
What do you have to adjust to? You've got
the hitters, you used to know the
ballpark.
Hitters.
Yeah.
Well, I don't mind the ballparks. Philly was terrible. That was the worst pitcher's park I ever played in. And I pitched in the Wrigley and for the Cubs in Boston. Philadelphia was the worst by far.
What made it?
The ball just blew out of there. It was a big enclosed circular stadium, and the balls would just shoot out of that place. You know, Mike Smith, he just flipped. That's all he did. He just flipped his wrist, man. And Lozinski, and the ball just jumped out of there. You know? And so they had the hard turf like Kansas City had. Well, Kansas City at least was outside. I mean, it was open, you know. Been a big ballpark.
Yeah, it was a nice ballpark.
Yeah, it was gorgeous.
Yeah. And Herman Frank, an old catcher, was his manager.
No. In where? In
Philadelphia?
No, it's Danny Ozark to start with, and then Dallas Green took over.
I don't know where that Frank's from.
Dallas and I didn't really see. They didn't pitch me much that year. Everybody got hurt. But we had a great team in Philly. Pete Rose came over that year, and we had a great, well, they won in 80. They won the World Series in 80 with the same team, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Zinsky, Schmidt, Maddox, Boa, you know, Boone. They had a really good team. You know, but everybody got hurt. It was weird, you know, and the fans were all over us. Well, what the hell can we do? Every game we had a different lineup, and everybody was hurt. And they didn't pitch me much. I went over there, and so I wasn't happy there. Dallas and I didn't. When Dallas took over, he was pretty hard-nosed. And then we had the lockout the next spring.
Yeah.
And Dallas wanted us all to stay there and work out in Clearwater. And I lived right here, you know, just south. Go home and work out. He said, I don't have to stay here. You guys walk us out. I said, well, you leave, stay home. Fine. I just came back, and then the Yankees talked me that I wasn't going to play anymore. And Charlie Lau with the Yankees talked me into coming back with them. pitch for them.
You mean you've been released?
Oh yeah, they released me. I guess.
You were a free agent.
They said, I'm sure they sent me my release papers. But Dallas just said, you know, if you go home, stay home. I said, all right, fine, see you, Dallas. Mm-hmm. That's the way he was.
Yeah. So you were free to sign with the Yankees?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the year the Kansas City finally beat them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I went there. Yeah. And that's what they were saying. What are you, a jinx?
Yeah.
Kansas City beat us.
What was it? Is it different? You know, you read a lot, you hear a lot about the aura of the Yankees. Is it different?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I'm sure every Yankee player you talk to who's played there has said it's different from playing any other team.
Well, yeah, some of them have never played for another team. But,
well, they have no idea.
Yeah.
They don't know.
But
I would play for Kansas City, which is a small market town, which is, you know, nowhere anything like New York. And their fans, the Yankee fans, are the most knowledgeable. They're the best fans. Mm-hmm. Them and the Cubbies, the Cubs fans. I hated going there. I was going from a first place American League team to the worst to the last place National League team. But after I was there for a while, it was what a great place to play. Jeez. I hope before I die, I see the Cubs win the World Series and the Red Sox win the World Series. That's mostly the Cubs. I'd love to see the Cubs win the World Series. If they do, if they get in the World Series, I'm going. I'm going to be there if they win that. If they win it.
There was a time during the last season when they could have wound up in the World Series. Yeah. One of them had to win one for James. Yeah.
I love that place. Playing all day. Well, they didn't have lights then, so we played all day games.
Mm-hmm.
I lived right downtown. You know, I took the bus to the ballpark with the fans, and I'd play the game, get back on the bus with the fans, go back downtown.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. I loved it.
But the ball could fly out of there, too, if the wind was right.
If the wind's, depends on the wind, I didn't mind pitching there, or Fenway. I didn't mind pitching either park. The only one that I never really liked was the Veterans.
Mm-hmm.
That place, terrible ballpark. Well, it was a football stadium anyway, really. Or multi-purpose, or whatever you call it.
That's when they were making those round, multi-purpose thing. And that trade came in the middle of 81.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that really made me mad. they got beat by the Dodgers in the World Series. George sent me a nice letter, though. Steinbrenner. I lost one game.
I want to ask you about that stretch. You went 8-0 over a 3-year span. No,
well, two,
not 8-0.
Year,
no,
year and a half, really.
No. Between the Phillies and Columbus and the Yankees, you had an 18-game winning streak.
Yeah.
And then when you lost one, June 11th, 81, that's when they traded
it. Yeah, and plus we went on strike, or lockout. I started in Chicago, and I got beat 3-2 or whatever it was, 4-3, and after the game, I forgot the lockout. I think it was a lockout. Usually are. So Rick Gossett and I just got back to our hotel, and the next morning I jumped a flight and came back home down here, and I got off the plane, and my friend of mine picked me up and said, well, we get a lot of phone calls for you. And I said, what do you mean? Yeah, he said, we're getting all these phone calls. Something weird's going on. I said, I don't know. So I just go have a drink in the bar. I was upset. Sit in the bar, and they're talking about the strike or lockout. And he says, in other news, Doug Bird was traded from the New York Yankees to the Chicago Cubs for Rick Russell. What?
they just didn't bother to tell you.
Well, they said they did call me.
Oh, they were trying
they
to call.
The reason they couldn't talk to me is because they couldn't talk. You know, once we break off, they can't talk to you. That's just called George. George, you got to stop this trade. I mean, it's going, you know, he's laughing. He's, I can't stop it. But he sent me a nice letter. People think of George as being so, you know, hard-nosed and rude, but he can be a really nice guy, you know.
Mm.
Legit. Damn, George, I lose one game and you trade me.
Yeah. And that was the last game before the stoppage?
The fourth, yeah.
The fourth stoppage.
Yeah, that was, that night was it. We all told, they all told, so I'll go home.
Mm-hmm.
Damn, I lose one game and have to go home.
And then you come back as a, you come back as a Cub.
Yeah, then I come back as a Cub.
And whose idea was it to turn you back into a starter?
In Chicago?
Yeah.
They got, well, they lost Russo, and they got me and a couple of the young guys in the Yankee organization. And they want, I think what they really wanted was, they wanted the young guys, but they wanted somebody that was going to show an instant return, because Russo was a real popular player in Chicago, you know. So, they, so I think they actually, you know, just wanted me to so I'd pitch right away and, you know, mm-hmm. show something in return, and then the young guys hopefully would come along the next 2 years and you know, get a return on them. You know, and in fact, some of the reporters were saying that I was just loaned. I was going to go back to the Yankees the next year, and it got in the paper. And I might, it probably might have been that way, but once it got in the paper, I nixed that.
Mm-hmm. Who was the pitching coach there?
Billy O'Connor. Billy O'Connor in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Billy O'Connor.
Yeah. Still
and Joey Malfitano was the manager. And,
Lee Elia came in there.
Lee Elia, yeah. Then Dallas Green came there. And that was the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I told, you know, I was, him and I had a couple of talks and it didn't go real well. And the Tribune had just bought the ball club. So things didn't work out real well there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd have probably stayed in Chicago. That, the Tribune hadn't bought it and Dallas Green had to come in there. I'd have probably stayed in Chicago, finished up there.
And then you came to the Boston where
one in their last season.
Yeah. Ralph was.
Yeah, Ralph there, he's a good guy. One Ralph.
He, going back to Kansas City, or the Frank White, Tom McRae and all those guys, George Brett. Was that as close a team, a close knit team that, of any that you were on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, especially, you know, because we all came up together. You know, we brought in McRae from Cincinnati, but he fit right in.
Mm-hmm.
He's running into people, and, you know, he's like Brett. You know, they're both real aggressive. And, you know, it's, we're all young. Yeah, we didn't, you know, really, I don't think we realized, you know, how good a ball club we were. I mean, when you're that young and playing, you look at the club and realize, I mean, we knew we were beating a lot of people, you know, winning divisions and stuff. But I don't think we really realized how good the ball club we had. Yeah, that's, we didn't, you know, like I said, a lot of teams had better talent, but we just played good ball. We played good, basic, hard baseball. And it just wear them down, especially in Kansas City in that big old ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
With all those rabbits, you know, and we get them on that turf as hard as a rock. It's like this concrete here, you know. And we get like Detroit coming there, you know, those big old thumpers, you know, but if you put them out in the field and they didn't know which way to go. Willie Wilson and Brett McRae out, Frank White running around those bases, they didn't know where to throw the ball. You know, they'd make four or five errors a game, chasing the ball, getting the corner, they'd start chasing around the fence, you know, inside the park home runs, and, you know, and if it rained a little bit, the ball would shoot, you know, skip off there, and we had a definite advantage in Kansas City. We had good pitching and good defense, you know, big old ballpark, and intimidated the other guys. That, you know, you got to hit the ball to get out of that park.
Yeah.
In those days, you know, nowadays, the ball they're using, I'm sure, is different. So we had a good ball club. Really good.
Did any pitching coach make any difference to you along the way?
Yeah, I had Galen Sisco, you know, I had in Kansas City. He was real good. You know, I was young, coming out of Southern California in the 60s. You know, my thinking there was a lot different from what a lot of guys were, you know. And so Galen helped me a lot. Spider, I had Spider. I had a guy named Steve Boros. He took me, and I had him in Waterloo, San Jose. Buddy Peterson in San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy named Steve Garner in Jacksonville was really good. So, you know, I had some guys that were really good and worked with me a little bit. Otherwise, I would have struggled, you know. Going through all that stuff, coming out of Southern California.
Yeah, a guy comes out of Southern California and he goes to Winnipeg and he goes to Waterloo.
Yeah. I'm going from Hollywood and the beaches to Waterloo.
There's some adjustment there, isn't
yeah.
there? Yeah. Are you homesick?
I went to Winnipeg and then went to Arizona for instructional leagues. And, I think it wasn't homesick during the season. I got instructional league and about right at the end of it, I started getting homesick. I'm going from Hollywood and the beaches to Waterloo.
There's some adjustment there, isn't
yeah.
there? Yeah. Are you homesick?
I went to Winnipeg and then went to Arizona for instructional league. And I think it wasn't homesick during the season. I got to instructional league and about right at the end of it, I started getting homesick. And I was going to, you had to go to school in those days, or you go to Vietnam. You know, you didn't,
yeah.
if you weren't in school to get a 2S deferment, you were going to Vietnam. In 69, that was right in the middle of it, 69.
Mm-hmm.
I got homesick. We finished the season in instructional league in Arizona. Yeah, I had 2 weeks to go in the semester, and I got homesick. So one night, I just packed my car up and went home. And
you were going to school in Arizona?
Yeah, at Mesa JC. Otherwise, they draft you.
Yeah.
You know, you had to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, it wasn't 2 weeks later. I got my papers to report for physical and induction. You know, usually you go in for a physical, and then they let you know if you're inducted.
Mm-hmm.
It's a physical and induction,
yeah.
So you go in the front door and go out the back.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to be kidding me. That's in 2 weeks, you know, and somebody blew up the draft board in South Pasadena, the draft board I had. Somebody blew it up. Lost all the paperwork for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months. And the lottery came in. They switched over to a lottery system where they picked your birth date out and 1-2 up to 365, and I got 280-something or something like that. But they never got me.
And
I think it was my mom. I think my mom was the one that...
I was going to say, when you say they never got you, I was wondering if you were referring to they never caught you, the guy who blew it up.
Whoever did, if I knew who it was, I'd thank them.
Yeah.
Because I'd have been in there, root gone, baseball career over. I think it was my mom. She definitely said I wasn't going to Vietnam. But my dad went to Korea, and she didn't like that. And it was basically the same type of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Police action.
Korea was they were drafting guys directly into the Marines. They needed bodies for Korea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My dad joined the Coast Guard, National Guard. He joined the National Guard in Corona, California. Him and his all his buddies from high school.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't get drafted. They activated the Army.
Yeah, I was there in that time.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go over there?
I was in the service. I didn't get to Korea. I wound up 2 years north and west of Winnipeg. In fact, way up in the radar early warning system, up in the frozen
death
northwest
up there
for 2 years. Yeah.
Not like cold weather.
No, well, it was only 60 below zero in the time. Tell me about life in bullpens. Is that a culture all to itself?
You've got to have a makeup for it. But nowadays, they specialize so much. You know, you really just have the one little job you do. You know, in those days, they pretty much mixed everything up except the closer. And even then, like Whitey would switch us off every once in a while if I wasn't throwing real well. You know, we had Al Rabowski and Littell and a couple of different guys, you know, and then he'd switch us around, you know. So you had to like pitching. You had to be ready. And you had to be able to throw all the time. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys said they can't do it. So mm-hmm. That's why I think I stuck around so long, too, is because I could do that, you know, start really, you know. Then in New York, I was starting. Then I was, I'd be a setup guy for Rich Gossage, you know, and then when he got tired, then Ron Davis and I would be short, you know, and then they brought in Rigetti later on. Well, Rigetti was the starter when he first got there.
Mm-hmm.
So I did, you know, a little bit of everything, and it's, you know, I think that kept me around a little bit longer. I was durable. I pitch a lot.
Did you have an agent?
Yeah, later on I did. After the free agency, I had a couple different ones. I really didn't need them that much in those days, but, you know, it got to the point where I think the ball clubs even wanted you to have one because to make sure that there was nothing strange done in the contracts where the Players Association checked every contract. And they catch stuff that, you know, hey, you know, you're trying to do something. Before the free agency, I'd go in there, and we'd go in there, and they just shove the contract in front of you and say, that's it, either sign it or don't play. And then the owners couldn't figure out why the players, you know, were so gung-ho about free agency. Well, it's their own fault. You know, and the Players Association, Marvin Miller, tried again to modify it before it went through, before it went to court. And they said no. So it was either one way, then it was going to go either one way or the other. That was it. There was no in-between. So, but that was their fault. The owners, they don't like each other. They can't get along. You know, it's their fault. It's, you know, they want to blame everything on players and stuff. But players have nothing to do with it. They're the ones that own the
team. Yeah.
The teams.
They're the ones that sign the check.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If they'd have done things a little bit different earlier, you know, it would have been a lot better. But they look at this last deal. They had, what, 4 years or 5 years to negotiate this contract, and they haven't done it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And after they signed that last one, they said, oh, yeah, we're going to negotiate this next one. There won't be, and way in advance, there won't be any work stoppage. You know, oh, we'll get this done, no problem. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Grabowski.
Yeah,
Grabowski. No, I'm thinking of Grabowski, who was the real character.
Yes, yeah.
Mo Grabowski.
Oh, Mo. Yeah, he was there, too. He was there before me in Kansas City.
Yeah.
He was there right before me. Mo Grabowski.
Yeah, he's one of the practical jokers.
Yeah, I used to talk about it. I had Lou Piniella there. He went to New York. He was another one.
Mm-hmm. What have you done since you got out of baseball?
I had a couple small businesses here, three of them, and then got out of that, went with Parking and Recreation for the city, ran the youth programs, and I've been off about a year and a half or so right now, and they've been talking to me again about coming back to the Recreation Department in June or July, I think, so I might do that. My daughter's in school. My wife's working, so she's a realtor. I fish and play golf and stuff, but I still didn't fill up for, you know, all the time. So I might get back with them. I like that. There's a lot of youth programs, basketball.
Cape Coral, a separate city?
Yeah, from Fort Myers. Yeah. We're the biggest. I mean, we're the second largest city in Florida, actually, land-wise.
Oh, yeah. About that out,
right
across.
It's 102 square miles.
Yeah.
It's huge. It'll hold almost 500,000 people. It's a monster city. When I first moved here, there was nobody here.
Yeah.
I used to hunt out here.
You see buildings going on everywhere.
Oh, it's just outrageous.
Yeah. It's not going to stop. Yeah. Not going to stop. At what point in your career were you married?
Well, I was married. My ex-wife was, it's mid-70s, 76. And then we ended up getting divorced. I've been with her for 10 years.
So in April, 79 kind of trade. disruptive, not only to you then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And if you owned a club or had to recommend the manager you played for, it sounds like Whitey Herzog would be it.
Yeah, I like Whitey. I mean, Dick Houser, too. I played for him for a season in New York.
Mm-hmm.
He was another one that was excellent. He was really good. Whitey had more personality, I think. But, you know, he was more of a character. Dick was a really good manager. I didn't know Dick. And I missed the first couple of weeks of the season, 2 or 3 weeks, because once I left Philly, I wasn't going to play anymore. So I just quit working out. And I ended up going back with him, so I had to go to Columbus, you know, and throw some. And I went to the Yankees, and I walked in the clubhouse and went to the manager's office to meet Dick. I walked in there, I looked at him, and said, "Are you the manager?" He looked like the manager of the Yankees. But once you start talking to him, he was the manager.
Mm-hmm.
He knew he was running the show. Everybody mm-hmm. there, Reggie, all of them. He ran the show. And it ended up, you know, George fired him. Was dumb. He sent in Willie Randolph in the playoffs against Kansas City, and he got thrown out of home. But really wasn't that big of a play. I mean, it was really a good call, I thought, to send him in at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was bang, bang close, and it would have helped us. And then George, he had to fire somebody. You know, we lost the playoffs. So he was going to fire the third base coach. And Dick said, "No, he's fire him, you fire him, and you fire me too." He said, "Oh, you're fired too."
Yeah. Now Willie Randolph is the third base coach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Weird.
Hmm. Yeah, George may be a nice guy sometimes, but
yeah, he does some things that are kind of off the wall.
Yeah.
But he's a Yankee fan, he is, I have to admit.
He does what he has to win.
He wants to win the ball.
Yeah.
It's been a long time, though, without winning. After 81, they didn't win for a long time. Mattingly was there, 13 years?
Mm-hmm.
Never won. Mm-hmm. That's kind of weird.
When you were with Kansas City, who was the general manager that was shoving the contract back to the sign?
It was Lou Gorman. I think it was Lou.
Lou Gorman was that?
Yeah. I think it was Lou. Yeah.
One night here.
No. Lou was there, and then Schuerholz, John Schuerholz was the assistant, came up, and he was a minor league, head of the minor leagues.
Mm-hmm.
I used to negotiate my contract with him, and he wouldn't give him nothing. Jeez. And he ended up being the assistant general manager and with Lou, and then... let's name it guys. The next general manager on. After Lou. But Lou was there first. And, they just, this is what they did in those days. They didn't have to pay you. You had no choice. You had to play for them, or you didn't play. You know, we were their piece of property. And
yeah.
There was no option. Whatsoever.
Was that 72 was when the
free agency?
The McNally and...
75 was the free agency, came in 75.
So
but they went to court, they started going to court, yeah, in 72.
The arbitration thing, McNally and Messers.
Yeah, they started in, 72, 73, something
like
that.
The decision was somewhere in there, yeah. And that's what opened it up.
Flood.
And Kurt Flood lost.
Yeah, but he was one. You have to give him credit. He was the one that actually he sacrificed his career, what was left of it, to get it started.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was the president of the union too, so I'm kind of partial to the unions. But the situation was terrible for the players in those days.
Yeah, was for a long time.
And all the guys before that was even worse. You know? We got Harmon Killebrew. You know, had no business leaving Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Why he was playing for us at the end of his career was,
You're saying that there was no negotiating room at all
No, they didn't have to pay you. You know, they'd sit there and talk to you, and they might give you a little bit more, but it's, you know, it was pretty much one-sided.
Like, what was the biggest raise you would have got? 1 year to the next.
The first year was 23,000 as rookies, and then I think the first year I was third in the league or something, third or fourth in the league, something like that, in relief pitching. And I went up to, I don't know if I even got 30 the next year. But the, I mean, obviously, after free agency in 75, I was eligible for free agency the next year. So Kansas City was smart. I mean, they were smartest of all of them. They got the core players, me and Brett and Otis and McRae and, you know, Frank White, signed us all the 5-year contracts, you know, with a lot of deferred money.
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, most of it deferred.
It was costless.
Yeah, it was even costless.
Yeah.
But it was a lot more. That was obviously a jump.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going, they came in and said, well, you know, we'll pay you this. I went, what? You know? And so I always jumped at it.
Yeah.
But it ended up, you know, we started out in the top 5% of the pay scale for the league. And 2 years later, we were down at the bottom.
Yeah. I remember when all that was going on and how, wow, this is revolutionary. I mean, these long-term contracts.
Yeah, but they were smart.
Jeez.
And we were all trying to get back in there and say, hey, you know, this is not right. We need to renegotiate this. Mm-hmm. They didn't even renegotiate nothing.
No.
Saved them millions.
Somewhere along the line, Kaufman was giving guys some interest in real estate or something?
Yeah, later. Yeah, he did some deals. The new owner, no, I think it was the new owner came in. Or partner came in and did some real estate deals. But I think that turned, from what I heard, that turned out bad. That went sour. All that stuff, they lost their butts on that. The players.
Yeah.
From what I understand, I didn't talk to the guys directly, but yeah, they made some kind of real estate deals with them.
Mm-hmm.
So plus you had all these agents coming out of the woodwork that nobody knew.
Yeah.
Killing, screwing the player. I mean, it's still the players that are just lost their butts, And I still don't agree with a lot of stuff. You know, the Players Association is way overfunded. I'd like to see them at least go back and give these guys the medical, you know, get their medical back and something. You know, raise the guys back, raise their pension tire or something, you know, use it for something good.
Yeah.
Especially the medical, because the way it's set up is once you drop it, you can't get it back. That's it.
Sure.
I mean, a lot of guys couldn't afford, if they got a baseball, to keep it.
Yeah.
I kept mine, but I still can only afford myself. I can't afford to put the rest of my family on it.
Mm.
It's a really expensive policy. It's a good one, but it's really expensive.
Mm. Yeah, and a guy like Early Wynn were fighting for years.
Oh, yeah.
Eddie Juice was in that, too.
Yeah, that's a sensitive spot for, you know, a lot of retired ball players. The guys nowadays, I mean, they don't really even need the pension if they do it right.
No. You know? But it's a generous one to farm out.
Yeah.
You're off for a concert?
Yeah, we're going to do a jazz concert.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I may stay here with Shelby. My daughter's got some kind of rash or something on her face. She has chicken pox or measles or something, I don't know.
Oh, well, I'm going to get out of here.
Yeah. Don't get around it.
No. Do you watch much baseball now?
No. I like football. I'm a big football fan. And I watch some, you know, every once in a while I watch a game during the season. But really, I don't really get into it. I like the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the best games, the playoff games.
Yeah.
You know, the World Series, once you get to the World Series, you're there.
Yeah.
You know, so it's nice, but the hardest to play, I think, are the playoffs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this last World Series is certainly a great one.
Yeah, they had some good ones. They had some guys come back. You know, baseball's they're just lucky or what. I mean, they go through a period where
the labor disputes could have ruined, really hurt baseball. Mm-hmm. And the guy, Mark McGuire, comes by.
Yeah.
You know, and saves their butt.
Fire and Sosa and that.
Sosa, yeah, they'd save those owners.
Yeah.
They should have been, they should all should have picked in money for them.
Yeah. And Cal Ripken.
Cal Ripken, yeah.
Saved the American League.
Yeah. And then they're at it again. They may do the same thing again. It's unbelievable.
There wouldn't be anybody around to save it.
It doesn't look like it right now, unless something weird happens.
Yeah.
Jeez. Unbelievable. I mean, it's people, I don't think they even, either they don't realize or don't care, you know, what it looks like, how everybody looks at them.
Oh, I don't think they care.
Yeah.
Well, you gotta know. You gotta realize.
Yeah. It's gonna take something drastic, you know, one of these days. Or, you know, they don't do anything unless they just absolutely have to.
Yeah, it seems. Were you a player rep at any time?
No. I thought about it one time, but for one thing, I was worried about repercussions. You know, if they kept, you didn't know what the owners were going to do with player aid, player representatives.
Did you ever see any repercussions?
No, not really. I never really saw, but out of the back of my mind, I always thought, man, that'd be a good reason for an owner just to, try to screw that guy around. I never did, I kept track of it though. I wanted to know what was going on. I wasn't just I didn't care. I didn't want to hear anything about it.
How were they chosen?
They were nominated. They'd nominate and then vote. Who they wanted to represent the team. Players would nominate.
Nominate different guys.
Two or three guys.
Was it hard to get anybody to agree to do it?
I can't remember. I don't think so. I usually had. It seemed to me that it was usually a veteran player, a player that, something happened and he didn't really care.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't see a young guy usually, do it. Just it's only been there two or three years. Plus, you wanted somebody that knew what was going on.
And on the other side of it, was it contested? I mean, if two or three guys were nominated, did they campaign for it?
No.
It wasn't that kind of thing.
No, I never had any, whoever got the majority vote, the guy was going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, it was a lot of work. It's time consuming. So a lot of guys didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
In the off season, well, most of us wanted our own, our off season free
mm-hmm.
to do what we wanted. You had to do a lot of traveling.
Yeah.
Plus, you guys with family. I give those guys credit. They spent the time and just did it. Mm-hmm. Marvin Miller was outstanding. He was really good. Those players owe him a lot.
What is there left for players to ask for?
Well, I'm not asking for anything. You mean money-wise?
Well, no, or anything, any issue-wise. What is there left that they would want different from the way things are?
Well, it's really basically stayed the same. They haven't got anything really different. I mean, the only thing that's really changed is the luxury tax, which is an owner issue. It's not really, it doesn't really involve the player. And that's the way it should be. So I don't see anything different they've gotten. Obviously, they make more money because TV contracts is just junk astronomically. And the pension plan is based on, attached to that TV money.
So what could there be a basis of contention between two sides?
Well, the owners wanted to change things, but that's the reason it's always been a lockout or a strike, is they want to change something. It's already there. Obviously, the first thing they've always wanted to do is get that TV money, out of there, away from, attached to that, the pension. And that's without, the first couple of times they tried that, that was automatic.
Mm-hmm.
Every player, 100% vote, no.
Mm-hmm.
At least when I was playing. Nowadays, it may not concern them as much as when I was playing, but, in those days, that pension money was, don't touch that money. But they get the same medical, they get their medical paid. the meal money, travel expense, whatever. So I don't see, I've never heard anything different, really.
So if they...
Because the owners, they want things changed. You know, they want the salary cap to, you know, to force the players like football to only take so much money, which to me is un-American. I don't see how it's even legal to do that in America.
Well, unless you agree to it.
Yeah.
I mean, the NBA and the, stupid, and the football, you know, players agreed to it.
Yeah, that's dumbfounded me. Gee. They're making up their... I don't know.
So it's, if there is any kind of convention, it's going to be because the owners, they want to either take something back.
Or change something. Yeah, or change something.
Change something, yeah.
I mean, the way it's set up, it's what the hell, it's up to the owners what they want to pay.
Yeah.
It's just, if they don't want to pay, you know, if somebody, the guy has a certain amount of money, don't pay him. Mm-hmm. They don't have to be in collusion. I mean, that's... But they all hate each other. A lot of them hate each other. You know, so they'll try to screw that guy every chance they get. You know, it's their own fault. You know, George, I see his point on this luxury tax deal. He gives Montreal $5 million, you know, in luxury tax, and the guy goes out and buys a new yacht instead of getting two new players that are better players.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's up to you, up to the
yeah.
Top. they can't do anything on their own where they agree. You know, so they what they're basically trying to do is make the players force them to do it.
Yeah.
It sounds kind of weird, but that's what a salary cap is. Well, you're making the players take a salary cap so we don't spend so much money.
Yeah.
So we make more money.
And we're all successful in our other industries and whatever got us the money to buy these teams in the first place.
And then you see them try to dissolve a Minnesota Twins organization that's successful and been there a long time and it's got 20 guys that want to buy it.
Why?
I mean, they think everybody's stupid or what?
That seems to me... That guy wants out.
And we'll sell it.
But the Major League Baseball is willing to give him a whole lot more than he can get on the market for.
Yeah. So it's a bribe.
So I speculate that he goes to Bud Selig and he says, you guys buy me out for this much and call it contraction or whatever, because I can only get $120 million if I sell it in the open market, and you guys are willing to pay me $180 million. Why, I don't know, but you guys are willing to pay me $180 million for it.
Yeah.
And Montreal is a...
Well, that's obviously a team that needs
a dodo,
yeah. Yeah, it needs to do something with that ball club.
So close down both of us. And
move Montreal to D.C. or Virginia or someplace. They want a team there, and somebody will buy Minnesota. The whole thing is they want to shut down two teams so that when they divide up that TV money, they get more money. They don't have to give the two other teams the bigger share.
Yeah.
Plus, C-League is in the area of the Twins, so he'll suck up more TV, more money, TV rights and fan base, advertisers.
Yeah, but if they put a team in Washington, that's a big piece of the Orioles TV market.
Yeah, I don't know if the team will ever go. That, I mean, to me, it's a shame that there isn't a team in our capital.
Yeah.
You know, there's a situation where the owner should support something in there, kick in some money, make sure that there's a team there.
They'll kick it in by giving it to Angelo.
There should be a team in our capital.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it's not a good situation. But on a dissolving team, and then your guys popping up left and right wanting to buy them.
Yeah, well, they don't want to buy a Montreal franchise to stay in Montreal.
No, they don't move. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's obviously, that's something needs to be done there. Not Minnesota. Plus, they had a good ball. They were in first place last year until All-Star break or something?
Yeah.
They were close, right around it. They drew 2 or 3 million people.
It's an interesting comment. I saw Tom Kelly. I said, yeah, I'd like to see you guys win it all. Doing it right, building a team, not going out and spending a lot of money, buying a lot of guys, free agents and all, bringing up this team and developing it. He said, well, a lot of the owners wouldn't agree with you. Wouldn't want to see it.
See, we, like Kansas City.
That's what they did.
Yeah, we didn't have any.
Yeah.
We built that team up, and we competed with the Yankees. I guess we can't do that nowadays, I guess.
Well, Minnesota.
Minnesota, yeah.
And Oakland.
Yeah.
Oakland came awful close to the end of this year. On the other hand, if I own the Montreal team franchise, which is what it is, the franchise, and I'm losing money for Tampa Bay or the Marlins, and I want to go out of business, shouldn't I have the right to go out of business?
Sure. They don't do it that way.
No. That's not contraction. That's saying, look, it's like McDonald's. Okay, hey, Mr. McDonald, I don't want this McDonald's franchise anymore. I want to sell it back to you.
See, there's two teams right there that never made any sense to me either. Yeah, you put a team in Miami, what do you draw from south?
And east.
Yeah.
There's nothing but water.
Yeah. That makes no sense whatsoever.
Northwest, nothing but swamp.
Yeah. They could combine the two teams, put them in Orlando, something.
Yeah, Tampa Bay.
Or St. Petersburg or someplace.
Well, Tampa Bay is in St. Petersburg, and that's the wrong place for it, too.
Unbelievable.
I was on the wrong expressway. I don't like, you know, veterans.